Welcome to Wisdom Talk Radio, a collaborative community of explorers in conscious living.
For as long as I can remember, I passionately wanted to know how life worked. I used to think truly that others had access to this, grand rule book, and that I wasn't invited. I wasn't invited to the party and I was missing out. And later on, when I began to develop my own inner relationship with Source, I discovered how to be an inner researcher. And I discovered that being an inner researcher was really important for being able to explore the unknown, for being able to receive the unknown. And no matter what, because that's where true freedom lies. The light of our own inner wisdom can bring such clarity of direction. And it's really hard to know which way to turn or what's true or not true when we're just relying on our mental concepts, our belief systems. As my guest today writes, an unprincipled life gives concepts a back seat and gives direct experience a front seat. Concepts are always abstract rather than real. They use words, which are symbols that merely point to reality. Direct experience is based in reality. What we are is reality. Just breathe that in for a moment and stay tuned. Welcome to Wisdom Talk Radio. I am Laurie Seymour, host of Wisdom Talk Radio and CEO and founder of the Baca Institute, home of the quantum connection process. Discover your unique connection with the essence of who you are by taking the quantum connection quiz. We're each designed to directly connect with Source, and we're each designed in our own way. We're each different in how we do that. And knowing your own style, your own tendency, and that's both your strengths, what comes easily to you, and your learning edge. That opens a deeper connection with the universe. It's also the secret to creating what you want in your life, because who you are is who is needed. So my guest today is Lisa Carrillo. And as a child, Lisa remembered a place of love and light and experienced moments of profound love. But having chosen an adventure of going from constriction to freedom, she complied with fundamentalism for many years. She worked as a chemical engineer and then medical device product manager. But her heart called her out of the corporate world. Don't you just love that? Her heart called her out of the corporate world and she listened. That's the thing. We don't often listen. In 2009, she experienced how we are not our personas, but infinite being having physical experiences. Now she coaches people and leads meditation groups. She is the author of two books, An Unprincipled Life, Living from the Unknown, and Living Awake, 20 Techniques to End, I Got It, I Lost It. I love that. Welcome, Lisa Carrillo. I am delighted you're here on Wisdom Talk Radio.
Thank you, Laurie. It's really great to be with you.
So, yes, I'm looking forward. I said to you in an email something like, I feel like because of each of us have such a profound respect for and appreciation for the unknown and how, in a way, that's kind of been our path or our journey, that our conversation is probably going to reside a lot in that place of the unknown.
Yes. Oh, it's so true. It's what guides life, right?
It is what guides life. And yet, that's not how most people live life.
Right. I For a long time, I really thought that my mind, my head was making my decisions. Mm-hmm. But then there was this really still moment, and I saw how there's just something moving and arising within me. And then my head doesn't know where it's going to go. So it comes up with like eight or however many options, and it's kind of thinking about all of them. And then once the movement chooses, then all the thoughts according to that one crystallize and all the other thoughts disappear.
Okay. And then what happens from there?
So that this inner guiding is what's making things feel like, oh, of course, that's what I really want. Now we can have resistance. Sometimes what feels safer or more comfortable is something else.
Give me an example.
Yeah. So leaving my corporate career, you know, that one, for a while I could feel it coming, but I was scared about how would it work out. Mm-hmm. So it was this constant push and pull. And that was my resistance, holding on to wanting my normal kind of security. But then there was a moment when it just dropped away because the potential, the life potential of leaving became so big that the resistance seemed irrelevant at that moment. So I was still a little scared, but it was like I couldn't not leave.
Exactly, exactly. I remember when I left being a psychotherapist and I gave up my practice. And it was, and I also remember when I left the corporate world, which was after that. I mean, they were two different experiences. But that moment when you just know that, oh, here's this big, I don't know what it is, but this big something. And I have to walk towards it.
Right. Right. And I think the thing that has made it easier and easier to follow that is feeling already full within myself. Because when I didn't feel full within myself, then life could present me an option, but I was evaluating it according to whether or not it would make me feel successful, make me look good, all these other things. And when I didn't care about those anymore, all that really mattered was, did it have this potential, you know, this contribution that just seemed natural for me to bring?
So how did you move from that, really out of that place of fearfulness, the holding on to what you thought you wanted?
Yes. Wow. That has been a life journey. But I'd say two things in particular have helped a lot. One, I'm just going to share this story. I actually had some kind of attachment disorder where I did the push-pull game. And with my husband, he told me, you know, he wanted to know all my authentic feelings. So I would be excited that he was going to be coming home from work because I would get home earlier than him. And then when he got home, I'd suddenly be angry at him. And I had no idea why. It was really frustrating. So I read a bunch of books and started to understand it and had a lot of compassion for those parts of me. But then one day, I was just feeling particularly alone. He had been involved in this big project, so our time together had been a lot less. And I went into the aloneness. And I really just opened myself up into just totally being alone and lonely and deficient. And then as I was just sitting there in what felt sort of like misery, I thought, if I'm so deficient and alone, what part of me even knows what it would be like to have this ideal loving experience? So I went into the memory of that ideal loving experience and asked, where are you coming from? And I went deeper.
Is that meaning how you could even have that possibility?
Right. Exactly. Okay. How could I know that could exist?
Okay.
No, it wasn't a manufactured imagination. Like I had a feeling of what it would feel like. Mm-hmm. But how in the world could I know what it would feel like if it was totally alien to me, if I was truly lonely? So I knew some part of me knew what that felt like. So I just kept going deeper till I found the part that really knew what it felt like. And all of a sudden, I popped out into being pure love. And never since then have I felt lonely or deficient. It's so complete. What we are is love, but knowing that with our head doesn't matter. It has to be a felt sense.
It has to be that experience, that direct experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that so much. I mean, it's actually what I'm working on right now, been writing for a long time, but really actively when I'm in my book right now is just about that. And it is when you have that direct experience of something that maybe you had a glimmering of or a memory of, it brings that into bloom.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So as you're writing, what are you coming up with in this area?
For me, it was that I'd had the experience. I knew it and I lost it. Thinking back to part of the title of your first book. And I lost it when my father died. Because he was the one that kind of personified that. And it wasn't until many years later that that got activated in me. And it's self-love. It's not the love for another or from another. It's that experience of the energy of love, the vibration or frequency of love.
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh, self-love, what a journey. My first steps in self-love were, you know, taking care of my body. And that helped a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then it was taking care of my relationships and making sure I was with people who felt supported. And that helped some more. Mm-hmm. And then it was taking care of my thoughts, you know, all the shoulds and getting rid of those. Mm-hmm. But the final thing for me that got me to self-love was loving all my experiences.
Huh. Okay. So talk a little more about that. Because I had a conversation yesterday with someone about what she was calling the shadow parts of oneself. But I don't think that's what you're talking about. You know, it's just like, oh, I love this experience. What does that mean?
Yes. Yeah, so when I thought of certain experiences I had as defective, you know, I didn't finish one of my master's degrees, or I was in a job that I didn't like, or I had people making demands of me that just seemed too much. Mm-hmm. When those experiences seemed like weights. And when I was in any kind of situation where I was perceiving myself under a weight, somehow I loved myself less. It just seemed like, why am I being punished? Or why can't I be stronger to solve this? Or it just felt like there was something less to my life. And it bled into not fully loving myself at that moment.
Mm-hmm. I can feel that. And that's a very subtle diving into what's happening. You really are an inner researcher. I just want to acknowledge that and tell you how much I love that.
Yeah, because, you know, when I started meditating, so many people think of, okay, I'm leaving my body, you know, I'm going far away when you're meditating, or I'm dropping all my humanness and going into some stoic place. Mm-hmm. But what we are is making every moment. So the jewels, the gold, you know, the preciousness of what we are, I feel like it's more discovered by going deep rather than going abstract.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the other thing that I don't hear is you, when you say going deep, I mean, I don't intuit it that it's not so much about going deeply into the emotionality of something.
Right.
Emotions seem to have more to do with concept, actually.
Yes, right. It's turned out every emotion I've had that felt negative or heavy or distraught was tied to some kind of belief. Mm-hmm. So I certainly don't alienate myself from them. Opposite, I pull them in close. Mm-hmm. I love the saying, "They're there, tell me all about it." Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it's fun to be able to have an opportunity to be compassionate. And boy, my little girl, my persona gives me lots of opportunity to be compassionate. Mm-hmm.
So how do we maintain, if we're an infinite being, how do we maintain our awareness of that so that we're not getting it and then losing it?
Right. It feels like, for me, there has to be two parts. One is, you know, tapping into what we are, you know, have moments in the day when I just feel that aliveness that's coursing through me before I even do anything. Mm-hmm. It's there. And feel how it doesn't require anything from me. It's so self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, all the ways that I push that away, really unravel them. I call it the deconditioning process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the deconditioning process has so many gems for me. So like this, any time that I'm upset, it's like, oh, look it. Here's a way to know better what I am, because I'm upset because I'm pretending I'm something else. Because that's what causes the pain, trying to be something else. And then reality doesn't align with what I was trying to be.
So it's the contrast. Yes. You know, it's the contrast between what you're feeling and what you somehow, you know, to be true. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Yes. This persona I am is like a house of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I come up against a painful situation, that means I've got a belief there that is conflicting with reality. And if I find that belief, I pull out one of the cards from the house of cards.
And it's not about the house of cards collapsing exactly, although it ends up being that. Because when you pull a card out, oops. But there's something then substantial underneath that.
Right. It's making it so that there's no longer the veil that makes it so I feel what I am instead of my set of expectations.
So you can feel what you are instead of your set of expectations. Yeah. Our expectations, I mean, that's a huge thing. And people often think about expectations as having to do with, well, I expect something to go a certain way, which is part of it, or I expect something of someone else. But there's the more fundamental, what do I expect of life? And what do I expect? How do I expect life to proceed?
Right. Yes, that's so true. We're in the process of getting a commercial space because we're developing a little storefront for an energy healing thing.
Ooh.
Very fun. Yes. And that's a big process of going up and down with things. Mm-hmm. And so we found out that there was some possible historical damage to the building, and initially it sounded like it was pretty minor, but then I talked to one person who had worked for the city many years ago, and she had said, she told me there's much more extensive. So, and we had just decided to put the offer on the building.
Oh.
So in one day I was talking to three different experts trying to find out, you know, well, what's the truth here and what would it take to remediate it? And,
mm-hmm.
It was such a full day. But you know, what was really great is before I used to have this idea that, you know, there shouldn't be so much up and down in life.
Ah, expectations, so in, you know, mindset or perception. Yes. Okay.
Right. So instead of seeing it as a full day, I would have seen it as big hurdles that I had to overcome.
That weight again.
Yes, yes. And I would have felt like, how in the world do I find the right experts? I mean, it was amazing how easily it turned out to, I got linked up with them. There's several synchronicities. It turns out somebody we had for dinner last week is one of the people who knows about this.
Of course.
Of course. Right. So, but without the expectation, it was just, oh, okay, let's get more information. Oh, okay, let's get more information. There was a lot of energy, but it wasn't, you know, I wasn't distraught. Mm-hmm. I just, okay, I need to get some more information. And by the end of the day, it turned out that the damage wasn't nearly as extensive as that person thought. And it turns out, you know, but what's great is, you know, if she had that perception, other people in town could have that perception. Mm-hmm. Now I know how to answer anybody's questions.
Ah, and you know what needs to be done.
Exactly. Yes. Hmm. So it was all just a gift. I got to contact all these new people I didn't know, which is something I keep finding the universe is doing. It. My idea is that things go simply, you know, mm-hmm. you just do what you need to do and mm-hmm. and you don't have to go get, pay for this service and pay for that service and get this result. But the universe doesn't seem to go that way. There's lots of things that happen. Repair on my house, repair on my car. But I feel like now the universe wants me to interact with a lot of people.
Yes. Wow. That's a really, that moves me. Because there are those times and those situations that call for something, maybe something new. I know I've experienced this, something new in myself. It's like, how the heck am I going to deal with that? Oh, but if I shift that, as you're talking about, and I bring in that awareness of, okay, you've brought this to me. What's it about? And I get curious and I start asking the questions inside. I start having that inner dialogue to understand a little more of, what am I needing to do here? Do I need to engage with this? Yes, you do. Okay, well, and then to see it as that gift that you're talking about, as that opportunity, it changes everything.
Right, right. Life is not about me being in my Lisa comfort zone. It is about being in this wild flow of life.
So say a little more about that wild flow.
Yes, you know, my idea of peace and safety is actually not very life-affirming because it's really bound up in my expectations. And, you know, when you walk into a forest, no tree looks like any other tree. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is what life looks like. Life is this, you know, it's just... it proliferates in all kinds of ways and causes all kinds of learning and interactions. And my idea of safety and comfort and expectations really is just setting me up to be unhappy is all it does.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think about that same forest. I was interviewing a few weeks ago, I was interviewing a woman named Jennifer Jewell, who is a gardener and who works with seeds. Her recent book was about seeds. And talking about the abundance of life within a dead tree. You know, we think, oh my God, how terrible that tree fell down. And then we see what happens in the way that that tree becomes this life-giving laboratory for all kinds of other life. If we only stop to recognize that.
Right, right. And when we can find the way to stay curious and in discovery, it will turn out that's always what's happening. At least that's my experience. One thing that I found really helpful in that process is cultivating a sense that there is benevolence happening all the time. Mm. Because then when the expectations are making me pit myself against life, I will more quickly relax those expectations.
Okay, so say a little more about that, because that has quite a number of different ramifications, really. And I'd love for you to start with that benevolent goodness, and talk about the life's challenges and what we might think of as those negative power structures that we look at in our world.
Right. Yes. So. First, I had to look in the things that happened in my life. So I made a list of everything I thought was, you know, something to regret, something that shouldn't have happened to me. And I went through and really honestly over several days found that there was more good from any one of them than not good. And that meant I don't have anything to avoid in my future. Nothing bad that's ever happened to me.
Wow.
So that sets it up as a different perspective.
And some of that might have to do with learning, with, you know, something that we might, you know, have decided we wanted to experience before we came onto the planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. In my first marriage, I was really trying to help my husband love himself more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously that is not going to get you very far.
I understand that one.
But boy, did I learn a whole lot through that. So much. I mean, I was really putting my self-value on what I could do for someone else. And that just became a burden in all of life. You know?
Right, right. A burden for him as well.
Yes, for him too. Poor guy. Yes. Yeah, this checklist of, you know, what have I done for somebody recently? Not in like, oh, it's a fun thing to do, but as in, I have to be worthy to be alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the first part, is really just getting down and dirty in my own life and figuring out where was I hurting myself, and where had the universe, where had source always brought good out of it. So out of that relationship, wow, I learned so much. And he's the one who taught me that fundamentally, we are loved before we do anything.
Yes. Yes.
I could tell that when he said that, I didn't feel it. Mm-hmm. So I went on a journey of reading books about people who seem to have failed and turned out to be a totally loving, successful, you know, as far as their relationships and what they wanted out of life. And it just started building that confidence in me.
Wow. So can you take that into what we see happening in the world today? Because there's just so much that's going on that we look at it. And there's those moments where I can judge it as like, oh, this is awful.
Right.
And
right.
There's a part of another part that kicks in. But exactly. If you could speak to that first part.
Sure. It's for me, when I'm looking out at the world, you know, it could be things about the environment or things about war, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I kind of break it down a little bit. So there's things that cause people physical pain. So when I look at that situation, I myself have been in extreme physical pain. I was in the hospital and had less than 50% chance of surviving. And anyways, I was in a lot of pain for a few days. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was when I thought I just couldn't take another moment, there was strength. It wasn't, you know, this wonderful, oh, everything's all better, but there was strength, inner strength that showed up. And then the next moment, inner strength showed up. Mm-hmm. And I was much, this strength, I didn't have to manufacture it, just somehow showed up. And I think when we're looking out on the world, first of all, we don't know what the suffering person's experience is. But looking at my own experience, I know that suffering has been good. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to deprive anybody of their discovery of their inner strength or whatever else it might be.
Mm-hmm. And that sometimes that experience of the struggle is all about learning about who we are.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then there's opportunities where there's just this amazing amount of compassion and solidarity and community that happens when there's really bad things happening. I mean, certainly you could see it after 9/11. There was
That's what I was thinking of.
Yes. So there is something that happens so that causes everybody to remember what really matters. Mm-hmm. And you might say, well, sure, but it's not worth the suffering. But when I tap into infinite being, the suffering doesn't go as deep as these connections go.
What do you mean by that?
So suffering happens to our bodies, and suffering happens with our thoughts. Mm-hmm. But below that is that inner strength I was talking about, that being, that connection with others that's already there.
And the connection with all there is.
Yes, exactly. Right. Our timeless essence.
And so you've said something about this, about the importance of experiencing our own rightness. And I'm wondering how you would see that around, how do we experience that for others? There's so much separation and division right now. And people forget that sense of, the way I think about it is, oh, I am presence. I am that I am. I am God. So God is here. Oh, and then as I look at you, God is there. But we ignore that, or we forget it.
Right. Yes. Well, first, you know, when a baby falls, when it's learning to walk, mm-hmm. they do not get distraught saying, oh, the baby's not learning to walk. We know what the baby is. We know that the baby's nature is to want to walk.
Yes. Yes.
And I feel that inside myself. And yes, there have been times when I have, you know, been in a scarcity mentality and tried to take things so I was secure despite how it might affect someone else. You know, it could be as simple as in the store. It's the last item. And I know many people want it, but I take it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Next one in line, and I get to have the last one. And I wouldn't necessarily turn around and check and see, you know, was there somebody behind me who really deserved it more? Mm-hmm. You know, I just mm-hmm. take it as, oh, I'm the lucky one today. Mm-hmm. I could somehow believe they were going to be just fine without it, but I really was needing it because obviously I'm the one who got it. Well, that kind of thinking is really just the same kind of thinking anybody else who's being aggressive in the world is having. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're not any different than me. We're having the exact same thoughts. And I've reached a place where those thoughts are much less present in my life because I feel how wonderfully abundant and loving the universe is.
Yeah. And that seems to be what's missing. People get so caught into that feeling of, well, if you have it, whatever the it is, then that means that I don't have it. And that's my survival, which we go back to that whole experience of that concept of my survival depends on me, depends on all sorts of things.
Right. Oh, gosh. I think the deepest thing that people have experienced is there was this overarching idea in humanity that we need leaders, we need experts.
Okay.
It was this, and you can see it in small communities where somebody will really just follow a teacher and then get totally disappointed with what happens. Mm-hmm. But this has happened, you know, we've given a lot of authority to people in government and people in corporations. And we didn't really want to have to monitor everything. We didn't really want to have to develop our local structures. You know, we let them handle it.
Yeah.
And then, wow, it got abused. But that's because we weren't ready to step into it. And as we step into our authority, there won't be room for them anymore.
Wow.
They'll just fall away. That's that. I really got that as a message. I was asking, why do we have so many negative power structures here? Mm-hmm. And not only was I shown that, yeah, there was this looking for outside authority that created the opportunity for all these negative authorities. Mm-hmm. And as we step into it, they will fall away. But I also had this vision of being in a place where otherwise was good guiding and no particular wisdom. It's very interesting. Like I was getting ready for work and suddenly I forgot that I was supposed to be going to work. And hours later, I suddenly remembered. So I went to work and they were not surprised I didn't show up because there hadn't been work for me to do. And then later I was somewhere else and this person I knew who was, a friend, mm-hmm. was stealing something from my husband. And I confronted him and he had also stolen a lot of my shoes. And I asked him, "What are you doing?" He said, "I actually don't know." And then I looked at the shoes and they were ones I don't wear anymore.
Wow.
So what was happening, he was just moving them on to somebody who could use them. Mm-hmm. So in this place, it was just a perfect harmonious flow, but there was no wisdom.
I'm not sure I understand that. No wisdom.
That means, I mean by that, that they didn't understand. I didn't know why I was late for work. I was late for work because
it wasn't coming from a clearly conscious awareness.
Right. There was no understanding. It was a perfect harmony, but there was no
absolutely in flow. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's time for me to go to work now. Oh, it's 6 hours late. Okay. But here I go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And here we get to have the experience of understanding. We actually get to see what different options look like. Mm-hmm. We get to see what happens when we supposedly are doing something that is in resistance. You know, we get to experience, this is why it works that way. You know, we develop this understanding, and that's what this world gives us the opportunity to do.
Yeah. And meanwhile, that opportunity or the experience of the flow, when we're in flow, and then we look back and say, oh, that's what that was. And that's how that worked. That's pretty special.
Yeah, it's so true. Right. When I was applying to graduate school, I wanted to see where my fiance at the time was going to go to school, mm-hmm. and he chose Atlanta. But by the time he chose Atlanta and then I could apply to Georgia Tech, it was too late. I couldn't get into graduate school at Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. So I applied to a different school, a paper engineering school that is now part of Georgia Tech, but it turned out they had a much, much better employment placement right after school, much better scholarship program and smaller classes and closer working with the professors. I mean, it was so good. And everything
makes me remember back to the days where I went to undergraduate school and I didn't get into the one that I wanted to go to. Okay. I went to the other one that I was okay with, but then I got to see, all these experiences that I'm having here that I would never have gotten to have.
That's so true. Yeah. There is this, I mean, to some extent, we don't know the full wisdom of it because there's a wisdom beyond our.
Yeah. I was going to say it. That's what was confusing me and why I kept questioning it is because there's still that wisdom where we may not be conceptually or intellectually aware of what that is, but the body's feeling of how we move into the flow is absolutely there.
Right. Yes. That's a better clarification. The wisdom is guiding here and there, but here we get to actually understand it more.
And there's something about that as a person who likes that, well, it's satisfying. But I remember that one of my main teachers would just get so annoyed with me because I would always want to know. I'd want to understand. And I would use understanding as the lead. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like I'll come to the other later, but I want to understand first. And it doesn't seem to really work that way.
Right.
We have to have that direct experience and then we can decode the experience is how I think of it.
Yes. Decoding. That is a perfect, perfect example. That's really true. We don't know why something's happening until we can look with hindsight and then suddenly we know.
Yeah. Yeah. I work a lot with energy and when people have experiences of have different kinds of energy experiences, whether with me, within their meditation, whatever. We have the experience, and then we need to see how it plays out in life. See, let life give us feedback. You know, let, I'm responding to that person in a way that I've never responded before. Oh, I have so much more of a feeling of love or of expansion or of recognition. And all of that is the decoding, really, of that energy experience. You know, what I received, how the cells have more light, but what does that mean in my life?
Exactly. The feeling, oftentimes for me, it feels like vulnerability. You know, there's this open-heartedness, this tenderness. And before, when I felt vulnerable, I wanted to fix something.
Like vulnerability equals something wrong.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. But now it's just so precious.
Yeah. Would you let me use that as a pivot to something that you shared with me, which I was calling the becoming the pillow practice.
Yes.
And that has to do with how we care for ourselves or how we care and how we care for others.
Yes, yes. So I had this vision of a closet. And you could throw a tennis ball in the closet and it would just ricochet. And when we're in our sense of expectations, that's what happens. But if you put like sponges on the wall, it will ricochet even less. But if you put pillows on the wall, the ball will just fall to the ground so quickly. And in life right now, you know, it can be any time, but certainly at this period, it feels like there's a lot of tension and anxiety and second guessing, you know, well, what do you mean by that? Are you agreeing with me or disagreeing with me? And all of that is just helping the tennis ball ricochet more. But being the pillow means when somebody else is uncertain, when somebody else is attacking me, when somebody else is denying anything that I think is important, I can just be the pillow.
Yeah.
And I can know that ball will eventually come to rest. I don't have to try to stop it, be a wall. I can
right.
be the pillow.
It just makes it bounce even higher and faster.
Right, exactly. And just be the pillow. I'm an ultrasound tech also. And the doctor came in, he was in a grumpy mood and we had had all these inspections that day. So the room wasn't quite set up like normal. And he said, why is that garbage can right there? And, you know, I can make that mean something. I just moved the garbage can, you know, I can be the pillow. I don't have to make that mean a single thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So how can we do that in our everyday life?
Cultivating this sense that everything is working for good makes it easier to do that. And that sense, I found a few different things. Definitely the gratitude practice. Mm-hmm. End of the day, end of the day. Just noticing all the good things that happened, specific things.
Yes.
And another one is doing loving things where I'm not going to be noticed. Because like if I go into a public restroom and I make it cleaner than when I arrived, that allows me to recognize, oh yeah, there's just this innate contribution in me that is the same in everybody else, whether it's having more or less expression, it's there in everyone else.
So you have your choice there too. You can be pissy about, look how they left it. Or you can take a quick moment to wipe it up.
Right. Yeah. Now I kind of like a bathroom that's a little bit messy because it makes it much easier to make a positive difference.
You should take lots of flights. You'll have ample opportunity.
That's right. Exactly.
There's one more thing I want to ask you, at least, but one more thing that's occurring to me. And you had given me this question, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say to about it because of a book I'm reading and about research that's been done about life between lives, our life between lives. And your question was, what do you remember from before this life?
Oh, yes. So I do have memory of past lives, but I also remember planning this life.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm asking about, is that between time.
Between time. So I was hanging out in a pavilion with a friend of mine, and we were just joking around, and he said something like, what was it like to be an atheist? And I said, oh, don't try to remember that. It's no fun. And then he teased back, what? You don't think I could have fun being an atheist? And he jumped into this life to prove that he could have fun being an atheist. Now, that is so lighthearted, right? Yeah. We take life so seriously. And of course, you know, let's play this game full out. Mm-hmm. But it's not all the way serious. So he said that. I then went and got my life ready. Mm-hmm. Went into a room where there were records of thousands of lives I had lived. I knew exactly how to create an adventure that I would find interesting. So I set that all up, and then I jumped in to see how he did. And it turned out he was actually born without one of his arms and to a mom who had a mental disorder and in a very constrictive background. Mm-hmm. And by the end, he was very happy and he was an atheist.
Wow. Wow.
And actually, I helped him die because he was, he had cancer and it was the very end and he didn't want to go through any more pain. So I helped him with helium. And he finished the very last part there himself. But it was really funny because the helium was in this Party City box that was full of balloons. And I could hear him once I had the memory saying, I won.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I also remember dying and that wonderful feeling of getting out of my body. Oh, we are so small and tight compared to what we are on the other side. On the other side, we're so big, so expansive. So it's just amazing.
And we have these two experiences in the multiplicity of experience.
Right. And to wish that I were there now is totally devaluing why I chose to be here.
Ah.
So it's been my practice because I sometimes could get addicted almost to just fantasizing about, what's on the other side. But I chose to be here and really, really the same love that's there is here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the mastery of life is to get to the point where I'm so in tune with that love and that timeless essence. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't matter which side I'm on.
Yeah. Because life really does work.
Yes.
We just have to be able to pull the wool away from our eyes and watch for that, look for that, see it.
Exactly. Right. That deep, timeless essence is not being hurt. Mm-hmm. Just our ideas. Oh, it matters if I'm treated this way, or it matters if I have my life going this kind of direction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It turns out it's so much better than our expectations.
Indeed. That's a beautiful place to end. It turns out it's so much better than our expectations.
Yes.
Yeah. Lisa, how can people find you?
So I have a website, www.experiencingthetrueself.com.
Okay.
I also have a YouTube channel that's called Enquiry with an E, Enquiry mm-hmm. into Self. Mm. And you can always message me via my website.
Okay. And your books, are they available? Where are they available?
Both Amazon and Barnes & Noble have both my books. And one I just completed is An Unprincipled Life, Living from the Unknown.
And it's a lovely book. I'm not finished it, and I can't wait to dive back in it, because as I was mentioning to you before we started, it's like I want to be highlighting everything in there, because you have a lovely way of verbalizing things that just goes right to the heart of it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
I've so enjoyed being with you, Lori.
Oh, me too. Me too, Lisa. Lisa Carrillo, thank you for being part of Wisdom Talk Radio.
Oh, my pleasure. What a gift.
And thank you to our listeners and our viewers for being here today, for joining in and getting to be part of something that's always a creation. That's kind of how I think of it, because I never know what's going to be created. And please, you know, join us here regularly for more wisdom, discovery, and illumination. And if you've enjoyed today's episode and enjoyed our conversation, please leave us a review wherever you listen, because when you do, I know it just takes a few moments, but that helps other people discover Wisdom Talk Radio and discover this kind of wisdom. And for more about connecting yourself or finding your own creative intelligence and your quantum connection, take the Quantum Connection Quiz over at the Baca Institute now, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us here at Wisdom Talk Radio. We wish you well in your conscious explorations. For more information and to join in the conversation, our website is wisdomtalkradio.com or at Wisdom Talk Radio on Facebook.